Tonight's gospel reading is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 18, verses 9 through 14. He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I earn. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. The word of the Lord.
Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, Kenny Rogers, Tina Turner, Billy Joel, Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick, Willie Nelson, Al Jarreau, Bruce Springsteen, Kenny Loggins, Steve Perry, Daryl Hall, Huey Lewis, Cyndi Lauper, Bob Dylan, and Ray Charles. And while they didn't contribute as much, we cannot forget the likes of Dan Aykroyd, Hilary Belafonte, Lindsey Buckingham, Sheila E., Bob Geldof, Janet Jackson, LaToya Jackson, Randy Jackson, Tito Jackson, Bette Midler, Waylon Jennings, and Smokey Robinson. In 1985, this group of international music icons, stars, came together forming the greatest pop supergroup of all times to record what would become the fastest selling pop single in recording industry history. Yes, it would become the first single ever to go platinum and eventually would achieve quadruple platinum. And let me tell you, as someone who has some familiarity with the record industry, that is quite an accomplishment. Written by none other than Michael Jackson, known at the time of the King of Pop, and Lionel Richie, known as the guy from that creepy video, Hello, where he follows his blind student around, and Nevin Teller, but also from the Commodores. Yes, this single, We Are the World, made for USA for Africa, was the brainchild of Harry Belafonte as a way to raise money and awareness to combat the immediate and persistent famine in Central Africa. Now, sales of this song and related merchandise went on to raise over $100 million to feed starving people in Ethiopia, Tanzania, and a half a dozen other countries. It was unprecedented. I was energized by this. In 1985, sitting on my bed in my dorm room, reading this article in Rolling Stone at a small evangelical liberal arts college in the Midwest somewhere, I thought it was so cool that these stars would all come together to bring this crisis to people's awareness, to educate this so-called slacker MTV generation about the real needs in the real world. I couldn't believe that this was going on, and I wanted to be a part of it somehow, because here I was sitting in my dorm room by myself, because I had my own room. I was in this townhouse situation, and evidently people had signed up to be with friends, and I didn't do anything like this because I didn't know anything about it. And so I was put in this with five members of the hockey team, which I don't know if you know me that well, or I mean, maybe not by looking, you couldn't tell that I wasn't that into hockey. I didn't know anything about any sports at all, you know? And I didn't really fit in with this group here. I did have a roommate at first. He moved out because he didn't want to be with me for some reason. And I can't understand this. It was so different. Like, I had a subscription to Rolling Stone. They didn't. None of them did. No, they played hockey and sports. They did other sports things. I don't know what it was. And it was also, I had just gone through in this situation at this school, evangelical liberal arts college in the Midwest somewhere, the 1984 election, where it was a landslide, where the only state to vote for Mondale was Minnesota. But you would never have guessed that if you were wandering around the grounds of this small liberal arts university somewhere in the Midwest. That night, when the returns came in, you could hear sports kind of like shouts going up all over the place. I put on my Mondale button and walked around just looking at people who didn't notice me or that I had this button on. Yeah, I wanted to do something, you know? I wanted to do something. All these kids, all these college students, they all came from the suburbs. I came from the city. They're middle class and upper middle class parents. My parents were poor hippies, you know? And did I mention I had a subscription to Rolling Stone magazine? So I kind of knew what was going on in the real world, not in this isolated suburban thing. So I wanted to be part of this movement. I wanted to do my part, like to be partners with Michael Jackson and LaToya Jackson and Tito and Randy and Action, all the Jacksons, all of them. And of course, Bob Dylan. Right? It would be like me and Bob Dylan working on a project together. So I had just started writing for the newspaper, school newspaper at this small evangelical liberal arts college in the Midwest somewhere. So I went to my editor and I told him all about this article in Rolling Stone and how I wanted to write an article to educate the students about this crisis and the ways that We Are the World, the hit single, was raising money to help solve this problem. He asked me if I was proposing an article about an article I read in Rolling Stone. I said, not really. He said, look, if I found a local tie-in, something that related it to the school and the students, like maybe interview some people who've heard the record or talk to a geography professor to find out where these countries might be, something like that, then I could write this article. Well, it did not take me long. It did not take me long to find this local tie-in. When I left the newspaper office, I saw right across the hall, on the door of the Student Senate office, a poster for an event that they were having that very evening called the White Castle Games. Yes, this is brilliant. The White Castle Game, the Student Senate was sponsoring a sort of Olympic-style games where people would compete all using White Castle hamburgers. There was like a distance toss. There was target practice. There were relays where you had to, like, pass it from the mouth to mouth with these White Castle burgers. And even at the final one was seeing how many White Castle hamburgers somebody could stuff in their mouth. I went to the event, and I watched in horror as these college kids were playing with hundreds and hundreds of hamburgers. I watched with horror as all these games they played, not one of them involved actually eating a hamburger. It was disgusting. Even after they'd stuffed all these in their mouth, they were given buckets to spit them out in. After these participants would grab handfuls off these trays and stuff them in their mouth and then just spit them back up like they were, I don't know what. At the end of the night, I sat there and I watched student council volunteers empty bucket after bucket of mauled, masticated White Castle mush into the large industrial-sized garbage bags. I watched them sweep up the floor littered with discarded sliders used in various games. I followed them outside and watched them fill two dumpsters to overflowing with what was thousands and thousands of calories that could have fed the hungry. I went back to my dorm room and I wrote passionately, declaring that while the rest of the world was banding together, making sacrifices to save the lives of these famine victims, the student senate and the student body of our Christian college instead decided to flaunt their privilege by playing with food and then throwing it away uneaten. Yeah, because I had never fit in with this shallow, suburban, jock and cheerleader type culture that pervaded the school. I'd never fit in with them, and I'd been judged by them. And to be honest with you, it felt kind of good to be able to hold a mirror up to their clueless, feathered hair faces so they could see how ugly they can look. I turned it in to my editor, and I got a call from him right that afternoon. He asked me to come to the office. And when I got in there, it wasn't just the editor, but the student senate president and vice president and the faculty advisor for the student senate and for the paper. And when I sat down, they all exchanged glances, and the advisor spoke and explained to me that this event was not meant to be a response in any way to the famine in Africa. And they realized now that it was probably not the best idea at this time. And if I would consider changing the article, leaving out the whole White Castle thing and just writing about the song, which they assured me they all really liked. And they went on further, when I wouldn't budge, they went on further to say that actually my article mischaracterized the whole thing and therefore was not accurate and not good journalism. But I held my ground. I said no. The faculty advisor said that it was really the right thing to do to let it go, but I still said no. I made my stand. So they ran the article. And, I don't really remember what happened after that or what people's response was to the whole thing. But I do remember that it was a time when I undeniably challenged these people who had always judged me. I had undeniably put these facts in front of their face to show them what they were doing. Those people who still probably live in the suburbs and drive SUVs and still say bro without irony, who vote Republican, who probably are voting for Trump. You know, there was another pop song that came out in 1985 that might have a little bit more to do with this text. I know it's crazy to think that these were both written in the same year, but who can forget that mid-tempo ballad by Arizona's Mr. Mister, Kyrie Eleison. Deep, meaningful lyrics, Kyrie Eleison down the road that I must travel, Kyrie Eleison through the dark of the night, Kyrie Eleison where I'm going you will follow, Kyrie Eleison on the highway in the light. I know it's powerful stuff, but so this parable here that we read for tonight, first we have this Pharisee come in and look and say, thank you, God, that I am not like these people, that I am not a sinner, I am not an adulterer, I am not, you know, a thief, I am not like this tax collector here. And then the tax collector says, he can't even look up, he says, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. Lord, have mercy. Kyrie eleison means Lord, have mercy. That Kyrie eleison is one of the oldest and most meaningful Christian prayers in the Eastern Orthodox Church and is part of the ancient Roman liturgy and our liturgy to this day in the Lutheran Church. Kyrie eleison, humbly saying, Lord, have mercy on me. I like that.